Good morning. We'll call the meeting to order, the hearing to order. All right. Thank everybody for coming out so early this morning. A little challenging trying to work around the Finance Committee's schedule. And so we felt earlier was better, and I know some of the members are joining us as traffic allows them to get here. So the first thing on the agenda will be the clerk to call the roll, and we're going to leave the roll open for those not in attendance. We do have three members who are excused today. Senator Layman, Representative Richards, and Representative Nygren are excused for the day.
Representative Kirkman.
Here.
Senator Coles.
Here.
Senator Darling. Senator Lozick. Senator Vinehout. Senator Layman is excused. Representative Markline.
Here.
Representative Nygren is excused. Representative Richards is excused. And Representative Sargent.
Here.
Great. So today's hearing is going to be on a proposed audit of supervised release program placements, looking at both the cost and the placement aspect of releasing sex offenders. This has been an issue I think the legislature has grappled with over the years in different forms. Most recently, Representative Barca sent the co-chairs a letter, and then also Senator Ellis and Senator Leipom sent letters based on the cost of some news reporting that brought to our attention some of the outrageous rents that owe some of these offenders. So being paid to have, at this time, I'm going to turn it over to my co-chair to see if he'd like to make some comments, just because I know this is something that's close to his area and his district.
Right. Yeah, thank you, Chair Kirkman. For those of you that haven't followed one of these hearings, we alternate between meetings. Chair Kirkman's got this one, and the next one I'll have. So that's all that works. Fairness between the Assembly and the Senate. Well, co-chair Kirkman is, I'm always interested in trying to find ways to save money, and doing audits on things that we believe have merit usually finds ways to save money. It may not be huge amounts, but I'm of the belief that once this audit's done, we'll find some ways to save a few dollars, and that's important. The safety part is also important. A number of legislators have asked for this audit, people on both sides of the aisle. So we're looking at not only the accuracy of a placement, we're also looking at the cost of the program. So with that, thank you very much, Chair Kirkman. Let's take it away.
Again, the first thing we're going to have our state auditor come up to testify and give us an overview of the scope. If you're needing a copy of the scope, there are copies on the sides. Also, if you're wishing to testify, I know the state agencies, some of them are here. They are not going to testify unless that we have specific questions for them, but they all have representatives here in the audience. So again, if you need a copy of the scope, it's off to the side, and I gave Joe plenty of time to get up here and get the microphone situated. I know we're not in our normal scheduled room from the south, so I hope the microphones are working okay this morning.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Kirkman. Who says auditors can't be flexible? Of course we can do this. This is good. Good morning. My name is Joe Christman. I'm the state auditor and director of the Nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau. As the co-chair outlined, you have a memo at your place from me dated March 21st, 2013, that outlines the parameters of what we would suggest would be the proposed audit scope for this audit. I'll direct your attention, as always, to page 2 of the scope, where we outline in 3 bullet forms the particular points we would attempt to address if it is your will to assign this to us today. The first is to examine the process used in placement within supervised release. The second dot speaks to costs of the program placement, including really 3 categories, which are fairly broad: housing, treatment, and related support costs. And then the third dot in the scope would also have us look at outcomes of the supervised release program. So in a nutshell, that would be what we'd propose to do. The most common questions I get from you at this point, let me see if I can anticipate some of them. How large is this audit effort? So if I use my terms small, medium, and large, I would define this as a small audit effort, assuming that we have good cooperation from the departments, very quick turnaround in terms of access to data. We should be able to move through this on a fairly expedient basis. I would hope that it would be summer when we'd be able to return something to you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions?
You're welcome. Thank you.
Starting at 8:30 in the morning might be good for, you know.
This is a hard move.
I appreciate that very much, Senator Cole.
We wanted to make sure we had a quorum.
Yeah, that's good. No, I understand. No, I understand. So anyway, let me start by co-chair Kirkman and Cole for bringing this up. Thank you, new members, for your interest. My interest in this is probably a little different situation than Senator Ellis, and I've written testimony. I won't repeat what's written there, but we had a situation in within my district in City of Racine where a sexual perpetrator when he was being sentenced, warned the victim when he was released from prison that he'd be coming back. And she had a daughter that she should be aware as well. And then, to her horror, found out on Facebook, of all places, that he was being placed back within a couple blocks of where she lived. And there's three agencies that are involved here. It's Attorney General, it's Health Services, and it's Corrections that all coordinate this situation when sexual perpetrators are released back into a community. And I've talked to the mayor, and this is, according to the mayor, not an isolated incident. They had a similar situation that occurred as well. And I know he said that he and the police department are very concerned that there are problems, perhaps out of the coordination of the agencies, but that need attention. And their police department has been meeting, discussing this. They are looking at changing their ordinances because of this and another circumstance that happened all within just the last, 3 months or so. And so as a consequence, I'm hoping that as part of this audit, we can analyze a process whereby when sexual perpetrators are returned to a community, how victims are notified, which they're, you know, the mayor said that in Racine they have a community notice that's put out that the police department handles, but also how they select what areas they might be returned to, and to ensure that victims are not victimized twice. I have a couple of very dear friends that were raped, unfortunately, and in the horror of that, and I can't even imagine then to have a perpetrator return to live close to where that victim who went through that horror would have to go through to find this out. So as a consequence, I think we have a serious issue here. I think that by analyzing the coordination between these agencies and also their work with the police department of the local community where a person's going to be returned, or sheriff's department if it's not a municipality that has their own police department, I think also should be analyzed as well, because clearly the mayor feels that there's issues there in addition. So that's the reason that propelled me to request the audit. I very much appreciate the co-chairs for taking this up, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Peter, I just have one question. I'm going back and just rereading the article from the Racine Journal Times. Was this case an earlier case pre-1996? Was this an older case? I mean, that was one of the challenges, because the database, when it was set up after 1996.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, to be frank with you.
Okay.
Other than that article, I don't have information about the other situation. I've talked to the mayor on a couple of occasions about this. I know that the placement was relatively recent, but you could be right that I'm not sure when the person was actually sentenced.
Because it was one of those challenges. I know, representing a rural part of the district, you're more urban, you know, that sometimes is one of the challenges as well, is placing them back into their home community where they came from is challenging in say, rural Western Kenosha County. There's no transportation systems, and there's no, you know. So
I'm all for public transportation.
It's harder to get to a job and those things. So, again, but I just was wondering if you knew offhand if this was a pre-1996 case.
I don't, but I can follow up with that.
I'm sure the department knows, and they're right behind you.
So. Yeah, and I can have the mayor, you know, through the police department, let you know that, too.
Are there other questions for Representative Barker? Senator Reinhart. It's a little challenging with members sitting behind us. We can't always see them.
Representative Barker, when you started to ask questions about this case, did any bits of information come up that gave you pause that might help us direct the audit committee when we're thinking through, and especially they're thinking through the questions that they'll ask when they get into the details of this audit?
Mm-hmm. Well, only that, you know, I think, first of all, understanding what the role of each of the three agencies that are involved are. Secondly, what is their coordination with the local law enforcement as these, you know, placements are actually being made? And then third, I'm not clear on exactly how they make these determinations of where they're going to place them, and if there's explicitly efforts made to identify where the victim might be living, and you know, if the, how that's even factored into the equation. I'm not clear at all.
This case also came up in my district several years ago, and one of the questions that I kept asking was, why wasn't there more community outreach? And I understand that placement is sometimes difficult, but it seemed like there needed to be more information gathering before the decision was made. Obviously, this is one of the most critical pieces of information, but there are other bits of information. For example, one of the problems in the case that I dealt with had to do with a very close placement of a secret home for victims of domestic violence, and that was something that should have been taken into account but wasn't.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that, you know, the other element of this, you know, I'm talking with the mayor on a couple occasions, though, is the fact that I'm not sure the effort that's made, you know, within the community itself, you know, to discuss with local law enforcement agencies, you know, perhaps there could even be discussions with the local elected officials. I mean, in terms of, because, like, you know, situations such as you're identifying, I'm not sure to what degree they would be aware of that.
Okay. Well, any other questions for Representative Barker? Seeing none. Thank you very much for your testimony today. I'm going to just ask the secretary from the Department of Corrections to come up just to answer the one question, the two questions, since he's not going to testify, but if he could answer the question on the specific case out of Racine, if it was a pre-1996 case, if he knew that. If the gentleman that is referenced in the Racine Journal Times article, if it was a pre-1996 case, it was a 1994 case. Okay, so it was before the database was set up. So I guess that will be one of the things that we'll ask Joe to make sure that it's clear in the audit, that look at when the database was actually put into place, so that there were people who were convicted before of that. So how is that transition, you know, those people's names being transitioned into the database? So, all right. Then we do have a group of people, and I'm going to bring them up all together. They're from Kiel and Manitowoc. We have a Jermaine Lecter, Jack Lecter, and if they can all come up towards the front. You're wanting to speak in favor of the bill or the right. So you want to come up and sit in the front area here, Don. Mogensen and a Richard Coons. Okay, and if maybe we'll just have two kind of come up and rotate in, if unless you have one or two people speaking for the whole group, and then just give the page over here. She'll take care of any of the documents that you might have. And again, if anybody else is willing to test or is wanting to testify on this proposed audit scope, feel free. There's little hearing slips. Okay, I'm not sure. Great. And if you could say who you are, so we know
My name is working.
Yep.
Okay. My name is Jack Butler. I'm from Keele, Wisconsin. Address is 1334 First Street.
Okay. Thanks, sir.
Richard
and Richard Kuntz. And yours is not on. So if you want to hit your little red button down below. All right. Did you want to just...
Mine wasn't
Richard,
on either.
Yep.
So.
Richard, did you want to just... Can you?
Richard Kuntz, 4022 Delta Street, Manitowoc, Wisconsin.
Wonderful. Thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for the early drive down here.
Yes. Good morning.
If you don't mind, I'll go first.
Sure.
I guess I'll start by saying the three of us who are here, we could consider ourselves the three amigos as old workmates. We probably went into this project as the three musketeers, and we hope we don't come off looking like the three stooges. But there's a lot of frustration that goes along with this for us. And I have a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of emotion, and to try and cope with some of that, I wrote down what I wanted to say. Not that that's the norm for me. I'd rather just speak.
Okay.
But I will read this, and then already listening to some of what's been said, I'd like to make a few comments. Now, are we given a chance to speak at all again later as we listen to what other people say? Or is it one and done?
It's primarily your time is right now.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to precede this again by saying that if we sound somewhat upset, it's probably because we are. We don't mean anything to be mean or vicious, but we've been frustrated by the process. Why am I here? It is not that I had nothing else to do today or that I enjoy buying gasoline at $3.79 a gallon. I'm here because it is not about the school, but about the principle of the thing. I am not here to make friends, and I'm not here to make enemies. I am here because it took well over a year to get someone to seriously address one inquiry. I have tried to address other issues in depth, such as the WRS, weatherization and energy assistance, delinquent taxpayer collections, and numerous other subjects. I have learned the hard way why most citizens give up after trying to make a difference. It becomes frustrating to contact an assembly person or senator on an issue and have them tell you that you should call the person in your district when you have already done that plus more. They can't or won't speak with you because you are not their constituent. Moreover, your district contact can't bring important items moved forward or brought to the floor because the party in control doesn't want to. That gives the citizen a clear message. Their government officials, so-called a misnomer public servants, really aren't there to serve the public, but rather the party. It always seems to be about getting reelected rather than getting the job done. So why am I here? Why are we here? We are here because after a year and a half of asking for details, action, and response, nothing happened. Three of us got sick of waiting. We researched our own information. We visited Sandridge. We submitted our findings and concerns. We solicited and regularly contacted the Audit Bureau, but we got nowhere. We are here because after a year of no action, we contacted WLUK TV 11 News and Mark Leland in Green Bay, who did a series of reports about the high cost of rent in Manitowoc, Brown, and Outagamie counties. Suddenly, when the details were aired and some public officials were questioned, a great desire to address the topic seemed to arise, which brings us here today. This discussion is about more than the high cost of rent and landlords. I have submitted a list of questions and concerns to Mr. Coles. And when I say that, that's what I gave to the young lady over here in a file folder, okay? Questions such as, why and who says, quoting Kitty Rhodes' letter of 3/22/2013, Chapter 90 clients are expected to be placed where they resided at the time they committed their most recent serious crime. Does this make common sense? This sounds like the Affordable Health Care Act. Who wrote Chapter 980? Secondly, if we can place two parties in a home in Beloit, why can't we put three or four in a house? It should not only save on rent costs, but also reduce the cost of monitors. Three, are monitors employed and supplied by Attic Correctional Services? Do we really spend $950,000 a year with them for monitors?
Is Attic Services a nonprofit organization, and do they pay state taxes? Four. Doesn't $340,000 per year for sex offender treatment for 30 supervised release patients sound extremely expensive? How much should they need treatment if a judge deems that they are capable of leaving Sand Ridge? Rent is not the only expense we pay for at these properties. We also pay utilities, $16,000. Heat, $14,000. Water, $1,100. Sewer, $1,800. Lawn care and snow removal, $19,000, plus more. An even better deal for the landlord, since nothing's included in the rent cost. The house in Manitowoc has a window air conditioner, never been covered in winter. Why bother? The state of Wisconsin pays for the heat. There are more questions, and I realize there are no easy answers, but the questions must be asked and feasible. Practical and economical solutions must be developed. Perhaps it is time we implement a lean program in the state of Wisconsin. I want to acknowledge that throughout our research of this topic, we received excellent communication and customer service from both Lloyd Sinclair and Deb McCulloch at Sand Ridge. They were patient with us and educated three old men so that we had a better understanding of the Sand Ridge operation. Every effort to work within the rules, mandates, regulations, legislation, and political correctness, the framework they are given to work within. We, the citizens, and you, the legislators, need to modify, alter, change, improve, eliminate, do whatever it takes to provide legislation and rules that permit a system to deal with convicts and patients that is manageable and affordable. We need to make the system functional and more restricted from abuse and overuse by lawyers and people who know how to use the system to their advantage. Thank you. One ad hoc comment I'd like to make, and I didn't make a copy of this, but just recently I saw an article, and I looked at it again last night, and there is a gentleman at, it's a patient at Sand Ridge currently. It's probably going to come up for review in June from what I read, and that gentleman is like 73 or 74 years old, and he's from Illinois, from the best I can tell. I have no clue why he'd have to be placed in Oshkosh. If we've housed him in prison for this long, and now we've treated him at Sand Ridge, I don't know why he can't go back to Illinois.
Well, and I don't, if you could maybe forward that particular article to us, he might have been convicted here in Wisconsin of something.
And he that's was. He came from Chicago and, right, and committed in Oshkosh.
So hence he was convicted under Wisconsin, so he would be housed here in Wisconsin.
I understand that. Okay. But I'm saying we need to look at those kind of things. That's where some of the common sense might come into play.
Okay. With regards, I just wanted to touch base on a couple of you've and I know we
feel free to ask me any questions you want.
We have copies of your testimony actually made, I believe. They're being made right now so that the other committee members could have a copy. Because you brought up some very valid points and things that I think we as legislators need to ask on a variety of issues. And, you know, Senator Coles and I, as the co-chairs here, have been very committed to trying to get fraud and waste in state government. One of the first audits we did this year was on the UWHR system, in which $33 million went out the door. And, again, we're waiting to see, you know, the outcome of that particular audit, which is a very large audit.
We recognize that this isn't big potatoes in the big pond, okay? But I also recognize that $800,000 or $800 million in uncollected delinquent taxes is a lot of money, and I wish we could do more on that, but I haven't had any luck yet. So,
well, and you're making a very important step by coming here to share your concerns, and it's being taped on Wisconsin Eye. And I forgot to tell everybody that's in the audience too that today's proceedings will be up on Wisconsin Eye after it's been formatted and put up on the internet.
And I don't know that you've had a chance to see them, but I've sent you a lot of emails, and I want to thank you for the fact that you send a reply back. From your automated system.
Nope.
That at least makes me aware that you're getting them.
No, and that's one of the things that makes it, technology is good and helps us as legislators. But I did want to just bring out one other point that I touched base with our committee clerk and our ledge council attorney. There was a special committee this summer that looked at the Chapter 980. Now, again, you asked several questions on
and the report was written up by Mike Queensland on January 9th, and I've spoken with him, and basically this issue wasn't even brought up. I mean, the broader scope, dealing with the scope, to me, doesn't make a lot of sense when the scope is so fine that you can't see the target, okay?
Right.
And we had the hearing, or whatever you did, but I think we fell short
several,
of getting some action.
It was several hearings over the summer to look at the Chapter 980 statutes and how people are brought in and convicted and housed under those specific statutes, not on the cost, not on the release. So, again, this is completely separate what we're doing today. So, again,
dovetail them together.
I believe they'll reference the information that they've gathered already last summer. So sometimes the legislative process, when we're, you know, the audit committee is a very unique committee. We do meet during some off election time or during election times when generally the legislature is recessed. We do hold committee hearings during those times because it is important for the legislature to continue to act and to monitor situations that are going on. And during the summer, Senator Vinehout at that time and I, we had a hearing on the economic development program. So, again, the legislature is now responding to the concerns that you've brought forth and Representative Barca has brought forth. So, I appreciate your concerns, and we will be having your testimony distributed to the members. And so, are there other committee members? Yes, Senator Vinehout.
Thank you so much for coming today. I'm amazed at all the information that you were able to dig up, and I appreciate your patience. I know a year seems like a long time to get an answer, but sometimes it takes even 10 years to pass a bill. It doesn't mean it's not worthy. It just means that we have a very slow ship we have to turn around. I really appreciate the facts that you brought forward, and I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about what led you to this investigation. What got you started on this that made you think this is something somebody needs to know about? What happened?
It's the gentleman sitting right next to me that dragged me into this. As I said, I'm more here about the not the school, but the principal of the thing, the way he was unable to get information, and he had a concern. We'll each try and dovetail into that a little bit to give you a little more background, but it becomes difficult when you try to ask questions. I know I called various departments, DHS, DOC, whatever, and it isn't long unless you're somewhat persistent that you get bounced around like a ping pong ball. You know, I can't help you. Well, I really don't want to speak to the communications director. I don't need to speak to the communications director. I'm not looking for spin. I'm looking for fact. And it's too easily that you're driven away if you aren't persistent. And the longer this went, the more the bulldog in me came out. And it's a concern, and this is such a small thing, and it reflects the whole thing. I think talking about the bill process, we need a lean process. Mm-hmm. We need to look at what can we do to improve process.
And it's hard because the state is so big and the crises are so many. It's hard for us to focus in on one crisis when all these other things are happening. Think about, though, that our process here can be long and it can get very detailed. So even though we're starting today with one audit that maybe you're thinking isn't of the scope that needs to be, frequently the audit committee will find this kind of information and then say either we need to do additional audit on this area, or they'll even kind of ask questions that go beyond the scope to understand what's really going on. So anything that you can dig up, any of the facts that you've dug up, the information that you have, all of this is really important for you to pass on to the auditor, because it can be used to start asking those questions that you couldn't get an answer to. And we have very strong powers in the statute. We can subpoena people to come here. Even if they don't want to talk, we can get that information from the different agencies, and always we ask for the cooperation of the agencies, and always they do cooperate, although sometimes not as much as we'd like them to.
Right.
So please look on us as partners in your investigation, and we want to be able to dig through the details and get the information that you haven't been able to, that you think maybe we need.
Okay, and I've told Rob on our phone dialogues that I'd be happy. I know he's told me the audit bureau is extremely busy, and I said if they need a bird dog, I'll be more than happy to volunteer my services.
Mine's about 5 minutes. I've gone through it, and I'm right around 5 minutes. I have it written down because I'm not a good speaker off the top of my head. I get a little bunchied up when there's a big group. So My name is Richard Conson. I reside at 4022 Delta Street, Manitowoc, Wisconsin. This is one block away from one of the state of Wisconsin's supervised sex release offenders. On October 27, 2010, the residences that surround the supervised release sex offenders were notified of this release and special conditions. As you can imagine, the people had a lot of questions. Within 150 feet to the rear is the home of a young boy and girl. Within 150 feet to the side are two boys, and 100 feet across the street is a young girl, and a kitty corner is a county park. It seems there is a lack of checking out the neighborhood in this area. You can find on the internet also a lack of checking out the neighborhood, and we had the gentleman previous here talk about Racine, where a supervised release sex offender was going to be placed two blocks from the victim. In Milwaukee, a supervised release sex offender was going to be placed in a home two houses away from a previously supervised release sex offender residence that didn't work out after a three-year battle by the residents. At this meeting in Manitowoc, the only way to ask a question was in writing and turning it in on a piece of paper. After the meeting ended, some of us were able to ask Kevin Miller, DOC supervisor for the Manitowoc, Wisconsin area, some verbal questions. Three questions asked by my neighbor were, who owns the house, how much rent is the state paying for this house, and how many houses like this does this owner have in the state of Wisconsin? All three questions were answered by, I don't know. We understood from this meeting that the supervised release sex offender would be under these strict restrictions for 1 year, and after that, could walk the streets like a released sex offender can. I called our Manitowoc DOC at the one-year anniversary, and when I asked the lady if the special conditions were changed, she asked me, what am I worried about? I said from the meeting a year earlier that the DOC and DHS told the residents we could be their eyes. She then told me what the new special conditions were, and at the end of this conversation, I asked her who owns this home and how much rent is the state paying. She answered, I don't even know who owns that home. Again, we had to call at the two-year anniversary to see if the supervised release sex offender special conditions had again changed without notifying us. The neighbor girl said the supervised release sex offender walked home without a human monitor. With this total lack of information we were receiving, I contacted my state senator, Joe Liebaum. It took a month and a half to find out that the state of Wisconsin was paying $1,500 a month for this home, which is 480 square feet. And in 2012, the rent was raised to $1,600 a month with a one-year contract renewed yearly. This is the size of a two-car garage and would have a hard time getting $300 a month rent for this home in the normal market. At the same time, Katie Prangy, Senator Joe Liebaum's district director, the person who found out how much rent was being paid, also said the state of Wisconsin Sand Ridge Secure Treatment Center had an annual budget of $43 million for 364 patients. This just caused more questions to be asked, and eventually meeting with Lloyd Sinclair and Deb McCulloch from Sand Ridge Secure Treatment Center. At this time, we were furnished a list of 25 homes in the state of Wisconsin that has supervised released sex offenders living in, and how much a month the state was paying for such residences in 2012. The list at that time showed the owner of the Manitowoc residence also owned five other such residences in the state of Wisconsin. Per this sheet, it shows the state of Wisconsin paying anywhere from $600 a month to $2,500 a month. Three locations are at $600 a month, which could be considered reasonable rent. However, all the rest of the rents appear to be unreasonable. Per a sheet from Deb McCulloch, the state of Wisconsin tries to stay away from high rent districts and parks. Does this even make sense by the amount of high rent the state is paying? It has been said that the state of Wisconsin has to pay this much rent because it is hard to find someone willing to rent to such a person. I say this is a shallow excuse because released sex offenders seem to find rent at a normal price. Now we add the word supervised in front of released sex offenders, and the rent goes up 4 to 5 times over market value, except for the three places mentioned above. One more thing the Audit Bureau should consider is it takes 530 employees to oversee 364 patients at Sand Ridge Secure Treatment Center. This is 1.5 people per patient, This results in about $80,000 more cost per patient per year than an inmate in our Wisconsin jail system. A supervised release sex offender receives about $13,000 worth of sex offender treatment per year. The difference between the two above numbers for 364 patients is around $24 million. In closing, it seems that Chapter 980 is a program that has run wild. Because of such, I would hope the Wisconsin Audit Committee finds it necessary to do a full audit of this Chapter 980. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Richard?
Thank you for your work. I think that what this shows us is that we have a very expensive program. We have a lot of legislators over the years that have been very concerned about sex offenders, and we've added laws on top of laws to try and deal with the problems. But maybe this is a good time for us to look into in detail and see if we're getting our money's worth.
That's what it seems when Katie told me $43 million. I mean, instantly I was doing them numbers in my head, and I said, are you kidding me? I said, we're cutting our schooling aid and our university aid. And here we have such outrageous amounts going for a small amount of population. And, well, that's the way it is. I mean, and then she said, the rent, we got to pay that much. Well, I don't buy that. How it's gone about, it seems that the houses are searched out. They're making, from the ones I see, and I don't know about all of them, but I've looked on the internet quite extensively. The house was a residence that wasn't a rental. So through the real estate, they find one that's for sale, DHS or whoever, and then somebody is put in contact to buy this place, and then it'll be a go. So that's what we see. And then a rental is made of that house. It wasn't a rental to start with. And in our area, it just didn't seem how it could fit, but it did. I mean, it said it was a fit. And it's interesting, unfortunately, my neighbor lady passed away where I said that child was 100 feet away across the street. And, the DOC said, well, if you know of anybody be willing to rent to us, let us know. Well, I'm sure they're thinking it'll be in a different district in a different part of the city. Well, here I'm 100 feet away. I could put some real pressure on by buying this home. It's sitting empty right now. And say, here, I'll rent it to you for $1,300 and see what would happen to this process. But I have a feeling that by the third anniversary here that this man will be probably out on his own. Every year he's getting more lenient or more that he can walk the streets. He can go on the bus by himself now and go to a convenience store. And I guess one more thing of this, this neighbor girl that come over, and she is 11 years old, and she was pretty, I wouldn't say petrified, but somewhat scared and concerned. Did you see, and I don't know if I can mention a name, but the sex offender comes through. They call him a creeper, so I'll refer to him as a creeper. And I said, no, I was cutting grass, and I didn't see him come through. And he's smoking a cigarette. So I got a hold of Lloyd. I sent him an email on this, and did the restrictions change? And he somewhat said we should have been notified, and we weren't. And this was throughout the whole process. The police were, like, the day of, if I remember right, of the meeting, that this was going, they were going to have a meeting on this person. And then the one-year anniversary, the police come around again after we contacted the DOC. And the two-year anniversary, then Lloyd just said what was happening. And it seems they weren't too concerned where he's getting the money for the cigarettes. It must be from relation, friends, or whatever. And that's another thing. I mean, one day I see him go through past me. He's going through empty-handed. He comes back smoking his cigarettes. So I figure he went to the convenience gas station and bought cigarettes. So somehow he's getting money for that. And Jack had brought up, and I told him, if you've seen the picture on TV with Mark had, the house is sitting there with a big air conditioner unit hanging off of it. I see two of them in Green Bay look like they have central air. Is this all needed? They're living better than I am. Thank you.
Mine is brief, very brief. I'll be last. It's on.
It's on. Okay. My name is Donald Mogensen from Keel, Wisconsin. And I kind of got drawn into that through Dick and Jack. And we worked together at Tecumseh all our lives, so we pretty much know each other pretty good. We have spent over the last year and a half, a lot of hours on this. And to me, the whole system, the cost is way out of line. And I don't see why, when you're on early release, that you wouldn't be put on. There's a lot of farms, big farms, that need help. Why not assign them to a farm and let them be productive? And if they're productive, they would probably better get back into the community. To me, the programs are way too much of a country club atmosphere. And as one person said, why would you ever want to leave here? And then the next part, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they don't have to, they can refuse treatment and stay there forever, as far as I know. Now this, you know, to house them for the rest of their lives at these costs is unreal. That's better, you know, why would you want to leave? Secondly, as Jack stated too, the system to get any answers is totally frustrating, and sometimes I think they just want you to talk, and then eventually you'll get sick of talking and you'll go away. Well, I don't think Jack and Dick and I are going to go away, though. So, and I don't really like to run to Channel 11 and Mark every time there's a problem. We elect our officials, and we expect them to carry our concerns and give us an answer back in a timely manner. And if it's a no or a yes, I accept that, whatever. But I expect an answer. But you can't get answers. Regardless, you can call, and you get sidetracked to somebody else, and we're working on it. And also, I would like to see that in the newsletters that our senators give out, that this kind of stuff is put in there. Not only the good, feel-good, touchy things like being on the farm or getting your picture taken. Put some of this stuff in here so that people know what it's costing the taxpayer. Because the taxpayer, I've talked to many people, and they say, my God, we don't know this. But that is the fact. And unless it gets printed and out there, that is about all I have to say, because Jack and Dick echoed pretty much the whole story, and I don't want to go through that again. So that's...
I have a very brief statement to make. My name is Jermaine Leffler. I have observed and listened for over a year while my husband, Jack, helped Richard and Don try to get answers from a very aloof and unresponsive Madison entity, our Wisconsin State Legislative Branch. These three men did not need to find extra projects to fill their time. They've achieved success in their own lives by hard work and continue to pursue hobbies that they enjoy in their retirement. However, wanting to help Richard, a good friend, who witnessed his neighbor's paranoia in the placement of a supervised release patient in their community, Don and Jack took the time and effort to help to find answers. By doing the time-consuming research, all of which is from public record, they came to feel it is possibly a program which may be being abused and misused. And yet, when attempting to advise the legislature of these possibilities, it appeared to fall on deaf ears. The information presented here today with support documentation was sent in various ways to members of this legislative branch. Thankfully, finally, one more gentleman, Mark Leland, read, listened, and did his own additional research to confront the legislature to respond, which they did in a week. And understand, as Dick said, it started in October of 2010. My only request is that the elected representatives of our legislature who are here today will look a little deeper into what these four men brought to you, and that after doing so, have the courtesy of providing them with your findings. A good share of the citizens of Wisconsin want the respect they deserve from those they elect. They want to be able to come to any of you who will acknowledge any of them as a resident of this state, not just your respective district. You are losing one of your greatest assets when you dismiss what they or others like them have to offer. In the words of a respected educator from our city, a word to the wise is sufficient.
Well, thank you both for your testimony. Just before you leave, I just wanted to say, you know, one of the challenges we as legislators face is, you know, we represent about, well, I'm in the assembly, so we're about 56,000 people, so in our legislative district. So, again, we get inundated. The internet has helped, but then it also has given our staff so many more contacts and the form emails that we get. So
that is one of the challenges that we have of all the contact, all the contacts. So, yeah, you know, back in the day, this is my 13th year now. I've not been here as long as Senator Coles has been here, but we didn't have internet. And you know, my predecessor, he would get on the phone and call. So you know, which got you know. I remember checking his voicemail. He was on vacation when he had somebody or his answering machine. He had people calling him at 11:30 at night. So, you know, again, the next morning at 7, I was on the phone to that particular constituent, and I vividly remember that conversation I had with them. So, internet is good because you can send something at 3 o'clock in the morning. Unfortunately, there are other people who send you things in the middle of the night, or you know, and we do get inundated sometimes. But your points are very valid with regards to the concerns and the cost. One of the challenges that we face as a legislature, as I brought up in my opening remarks, is, you know, again, I represent a more rural district, and that same conversation of where to place sex offenders. Now, I know that. You know, I have a couple farms in my district. One of the largest ones has about 300 dairy cows. I don't know necessarily that they would want to have a sex offender on their grounds. So, I mean, it is very challenging, the whole discussion of where placement of the sex offenders go. And anytime there is a discussion in our community, we had one that was over the border from Illinois because my district actually abuts Illinois. The gentleman was coming up over the border. Again, that particular meeting generated a number of people who didn't want him coming for a visit to his kids in an apartment complex. So, again, the challenges that we face with regards to the most serious sex offenders is very challenging and where to place them. And it's not an easy discussion, and that's why the cost.
And so then maybe the consequences of the challenges that this problem faces, maybe this is going to have to cost us this amount.
Right.
This amount. I understand that.
Right.
But in fact, my only point was that these guys had looked at all of this.
Right.
And it was not a great response.
Because there's not a simple answer. Right.
We sent it many different ways.
But there's just not one simple answer, because when we have those discussions, even in my rural district, about placement, you know, even if they're in the middle of, you know, a cornfield in a farm, nobody wants them there either. So, again, it's definitely very, it's a challenging discussion. And several years ago, we had a legislator who wanted to put it into like a build up like a dormitory for these folks. But again, where to place that then in the state of Wisconsin? So again, the challenges that we face are enormous when it comes to this issue.
The way it is right now is very humane for those patients.
It's definitely a challenge. So
could I say one word yet? Maybe the state should think about starting a farm like the one up by Oneida for the boys, you know. We need to get these people into a productive life. Then maybe they can make a life for themselves. Walking around And having somebody watching them is not the way to make them productive.
Thank you, Representative Kirkman. I just want to thank all four of you for all the work you've done. I think you've, what you've experienced is sort of the frustration that Samantha and I deal with. We've got a whole bunch of ideas to audit things. We can't do them all.
Understand.
Now, I'm not trying to make an excuse, but yeah. We're dealing, as Senator Vinehout behind us pointed out, there's a number of crises that have occurred that we had to deal with. And maybe the time will come down the road, a year or two, we've audited so many things, we're scratching our heads on what to audit, but believe me, there's lots of ideas that are cooking that we would like to get to. And in fact, we recently passed a bill in a bipartisan debate, came out of this committee, I think the governor has signed it already, that took away the requirement for Joe Christman, our head auditor, and his team to have to do some routine audits that was absorbing a lot of his team's time. So that opens up more capacity in the audit bureau to do some of the stuff that we're aching to do. So anyhow, it's so we share your frustration. And I just want to thank you for all the work you've done, and all that work will be passed over to Joe Christman and his team, and we'll wait to see the results. So we'll all see the results.
Okay.
So
thank you
very much.
All right, we have one final speaker, Senator Joe Lipa.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
And I know you've got to rush off to finance, so thank you very much for sticking around.
Finance has lots of time for us, so it's good to be with you this morning, though, and I appreciate the opportunity to just testify briefly to encourage my support for this very important audit. I want to express my appreciation to Jack, Dick, Don, and Jermaine for them being here today. And as they've represented, they've been involved in working on this issue now for over a year. And I've worked with them. I enjoy weekly, if not a couple of times a week, conversations with Jack. And Jack's good. He usually calls at 7 in the morning, knowing that he can catch me at the time when I'm available on my phone. And we've been working on this. I've been expressing and trying to inform the constituents regarding the challenges of the timing of this audit as well. The number of audits that you had on your plate, recently informing them about the bill that Senator Coles just mentioned that gives you some greater capacity and opportunity to look into these things. And I think that this is a subject that definitely deserves your attention and the attention of the audit committee and the audit staff. As Senator Vinon indicated, and I think you all were talking about this, the issue relating the treatment and the placement of sexually violent individuals, and specifically supervised release of those individuals into our communities, has been an issue that this legislature has struggled with throughout the past number of years and decades, both on the Democratic side of the aisle and the Republican side of the aisle. And I think that the program definitely needs to be reviewed and considered in regard to the conditions and the situations that come in place in regard to the release of these individuals. But also from a taxpayer perspective, I think that it is timely that we take a look and have a better understanding of the types of costs that are involved in the release of the individuals into the community. The audit staff has proposed a scope, and I would just encourage that maybe the committee expand the scope just briefly. On the first bullet point, they talk about evaluating the process used to place individuals in the community. I would encourage that we specifically look at the statutory restrictions, because as you talked about, legislatures of the past have placed more and more restrictions as to where these individuals can be placed. And I think we need to have a full understanding of the challenges that the department faces when they're trying to place these individuals into our community. Under the second bullet point, including the review of the cost of housing, again, specifically, there is concern and interest in understanding how the rental properties are solicited and how they're procured, and I think we need to have a better understanding of that. And then under the review of related support services, a key area there is working to get these individuals employed and involved in efforts that will help them to become productive members of our society. But there's a cost to that as well. And there are individual job monitors that have to be with these individuals at times, and I think we have to evaluate the cost versus the benefit of that opportunity as well. So I appreciate the audit committee's review of the request, and I encourage you to move it forward. And it's timely as well, and this is what I wanted our constituents to know as well. I had shared with them that kind of the first step in the concern was to bring it to the administration last summer when the legislature was out of session. We worked at that, and now the administration is specifically proposing an increase in the 13-15 budget for supervised release. And I think that it's timely that this legislature take a look at the release program before we authorize the extension of any additional funds. Specifically, the administration is proposing an additional $919,000 in 13-14 and $1.4 million in 14-15 to accommodate the release of additional individuals going from 33 to 38 to 43. In the years of the biennium. So this is a timely matter that is appropriately before us at this time, and I strongly recommend that we move forward with this offer. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator, for your additional comments. Since you've worked so closely, I have constituents in my area that I talk to almost weekly, so I'm sure they're good for a cup of coffee, too. any other questions? No. Okay, seeing none. Thank you very much. All right, and at this time we're going to have Joe come back up and just kind of give us a overview of the scope with the additional information that had been provided to us. With the additional information that was brought forth by the three amigos or the four amigos and the additional scope questions with regards to Senator Lipom, do you think that it could be expanded and then still where are we at on the size of the audit?
Certainly. I would. We've been listening, obviously, and taking notes throughout the course of the hearing this morning. You can hear my pen scratching over there. We also think that the scope of what we've presented to you captures the spirit of those ideas. So as you know, the scope creates the floor, not the ceiling of the audit effort. So we should be able to accommodate all of those different concerns that were raised. And if it's the committee's will to narrow in on the points specifically that Senator Lipom raised as well, I think those also fit within the parameters of those three dots.
Okay, great. Representative Sargent first.
Thank you, Chairs Coles and Kirkman, for bringing this to us, and to Joe and your staff for your thoughtful memo. There's a few things that I'd like to encourage us to look at as we go down this path, and I really appreciate the testimony that we've received today. I know that this is a highly emotional topic and very difficult for many people to talk about, family members of the victims as well as the predators, and I'm thankful for what our state does to keep people safe. Tax dollars are tight, and we need to figure out how to make the best use of them. I have a few questions in regards to, in the memo, what a reasonable attempt to notify the victim and the victim's family is, not only when it comes to the placement, but when it comes to changes in the placement. I heard today from some of our testimony that there are changes that take place as someone is in the community and the community members don't feel that they have received adequate notification. And we can all make different assumptions as to what reasonable attempts are, but until that is defined more clearly, it opens up doors. And I also have constituents who have children who have been victims of atrocious sexual assaults, violent assaults on them. And those families, in protecting their children as they age into adolescence, have felt that changes have happened in the predator's lifestyle that they have not known about. And as their children become more autonomous in society, they would like to know what's happening as opposed to finding a car in the mall that belongs to the predator, for example. So if we could please work on that definition. I'd also like to know who we're contracting with these homes, if it's through, for example, Attic Corrections, if they're individuals, if there's other agencies besides Attic. And I'm not sure that this is the time or the place to talk about, but how much of this, if we had continued to do this through the state as opposed to outsourcing, sometimes it feels like we make the decision to outsource services because it's going to save us money. Initially, we go to bidding processes, and it does save us money, but then we kind of get ourselves over a barrel, and we're in that community not doing it within the state, and as some of the testimony pointed to today, the rates can increase because we don't have a lot of options as to who it is that we're sourcing this with. And does it make sense that maybe the state owns some of the properties that these people are placed in, as opposed to having private folks or private corporations owning this money? I think it's important, as tight as the dollars are, that we are as frugal with them as possible. I'd also like to know, again, I'm new to this committee and I appreciate your patience. This is my last question. What are other communities, what are other states doing with these offenders when they are brought out of the treatment facilities, out of corrections? Is what we're doing in Wisconsin the appropriate thing, or is there anything that we can learn from states who have gone through this, who have maybe tightened their belts to make sure that their citizens continue to be safe without costing so much money? And I appreciate Chair Kirkman.
Sure. Yes, Senator Vine.
My question is very simple, and that is about access to the contracts. We heard a number of different details, and in the written testimony there's even more details about contracts, and yet there's been sometimes difficulty in obtaining those contracts, and I just wondered about your ability to find the correct contracts and get them get the details of those contracts.
Sure, thank you. This is a place where cooperation is a key word from the agency. Of course, as you know, under 1394, the state auditor has access to any record maintained anywhere in state government, so I wouldn't assume that we'd have any difficulty obtaining those contracts.
Thank you. I'd just add a footnote to that I appreciate the cooperation of the department, and I really do hope that this audit can be simple, and I know that it needs to be. In order for it to be simple, we need to have the cooperation of the department to be able to get the details. So I appreciate the department being cooperative with the audit bureau. Thank you,
Senator Lozick. Thank you, Chair. As many of you know, I've been involved with this issue for a long, long time, serving on task force many years ago. Just last summer, a legislative council study committee on this issue. And my concern has always been, you know, is there a way that we would not have to release them into society as long as there's a potential for them to reoffend? That's been a thorn in my side for a long time. My question for you is, you indicated you'll have full access. As legislators and as citizens, because this is healthcare related and HIPAA laws, a lot of times we can't get some of that information. You as auditors, will you have full access to all of the supposed healthcare information?
Thank you, Senator. It's a very good question. There are controls that we need to be mindful about over the nature of that information, but you are right to say that as auditors, I would presume we would have access to the information. Our ability to disclose the information to you, we may have to sanitize in some ways some of the ways in which we'd present information, talk about it in the aggregate, look at summary, overall, bigger picture pieces. But the HIPAA protections would not preclude us from obtaining the information, in my view, at this time.
Thank you. I more or less anticipated that answer, and I appreciate that answer, and I respect that answer. The second part of my question and my request is, in terms of these folks, what you will have access to and what you will see is the releases. And I had a lot of concern and a lot of heartburn over one that was released with a self-reported 40% chance that he would reoffend. And in fact, he pretty much immediately went up to Minnesota and raped a 70-year-old church lady. So what I'm asking, and this is a tall task, but at least to look at that criteria for release to the public in terms of the decisions that we make legislatively in terms of laws as to what percent risk is determined and these people are released to live in the community. I'm very interested in that, and as it relates to other states or any type of information you can present to us that may be helpful. As a legislator, my desire is that they don't get released to the community. On the other side of the coin, this is a fragile health care law, which in the bigger picture maybe protects society to a certain extent. But I'm certainly would be very interested in what the Audit Bureau could decipher from this that type of information. Thank you, Chair.
Great. Thank you so much, Senator. All right. So I think we've added to your discussion here, and I know that you guys took wonderful notes, and looking forward to the product.
Thank you. I would like to just add for our common understanding as well, to make sure we're speaking about the same focus in the effort. I want to draw your attention to, if you imagine a conversation about policies relating to sex offenders, and then you imagine a smaller subset that deals with Chapter 980 placement, and then you consider a smaller subset that is supervised release. This audit as scoped is framed around the supervised release program. And I say that to you just to make sure that we're all speaking about the same basis of understanding about what the assignment is that you'd be considering assigning to us today.
Yes. No, I agree. Thank you very much, gentlemen. All right. I'm now going to adjourn. There's nobody else to testify. I'm going to adjourn this hearing, and we're going to go into executive session, and the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Kirkman.
Here.
Senator Coles.
Here.
Senator Darling.
Here.
Senator Lozick.
Here.
Senator Vinehout.
Here.
Senator Lehman is excused. Representative Markline.
Here.
Representatives Nygren and Richards are excused. Representative Sargent.
Here.
Great. At this time, I'd entertain a motion.
I would move, Madam Chair, the proposed audit.
As seconded by Senator Vinehout. Great. And so discussion on the proposed audit and all the comments that came today. Seen any? All right. I think it's a good start, and I appreciate the follow-up that we had from the state auditor, and look forward to the cooperation between the three agencies that are involved, and I appreciate the citizen contact today. It's not usually on a scope, we don't usually get testimony from private citizens. So, again, you've done more by being here today than in most cases. So, again, thank you so much. At this time, I'd entertain a motion for adoption of the scope. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Kirkman.
Aye.
Senator Coles.
Aye.
Senator Darling.
Aye.
Senator Lozick.
Aye.
Senator Vinehout.
Aye.
Senator Lehman is excused. Representative Markline.
Aye.
Representatives Nygren and Richards are excused. Representative Sargent.
Aye.
Right. Motion passes.
Motion passes. Thank you so much for your time and testimony today, and look forward to seeing you in a few months for a follow-up. Adjourned.